everybody. This is Ellie.
And this is Jessie. And this is All Ideas Are Bad Ideas,
the podcast about the things we believe in our hearts to be perfect, but know in our minds are fundamentally flawed.
Our bad ideas focus for this week is the day after tomorrow. Which I'm assuming has some pretty dramatic music. It had like a good dramatic thriller soundtrack.
I just don't know the theme song. It's another one of those movies. We've done a couple of those recently.
We've done a few, but I feel like also this is the type of movie that doesn't like need a memorable theme song.
Also, I feel like, I feel like Hans Zimmer might have wrote the soundtrack.
And like, he writes good soundtracks, but like, I also mean like, as far as like a recognizable theme, a one movie action movie like The Day After Tomorrow doesn't necessarily need the most memorable theme.
I was very wrong. It's by Harold Closer.
Oh, okay.
So he's not Hans Zimmer. They are, in fact, different people.
It turns out.
Sorry, everybody, for being very wrong.
But you know what I mean? Like, yeah. It's the type of movie that doesn't necessarily need like a super memorable theme song.
No, it just needs a good one.
Yeah, it just needs good music, but it doesn't, it's not
I don't have to know it later.
Yeah, it's not like a series or a superhero movie or something where you feel like it really does need, like, a memorable theme song.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like it doesn't Jurassic use, like, a pop Park song. Or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, it's just, it needs dramatic music that fits the scenes, and then it's good.
Yes. I think the sort of, like, quality but forgettability of the theme song is very, like, relevant to this movie because it's, like, truly a movie I very deeply enjoy. Like, I mm-hmm. think I watched it for the first time in a middle school science class. Like, I had told you before we started recording, like, when we were talking mm-hmm. about re-watching it and stuff, and I've seen it a bajillion times since because it's one of those movies that's always on, like, TBS at, like, 10 a.m. and you're eating yeah. breakfast in the summer and you're like, I'm gonna watch 20 minutes of The Day After Tomorrow. So, like, I've seen every part of this movie a million times. I have probably sat down to watch it start to finish maybe three, like, but then I always, like, because of that, like, I always sort of forget that it's actually really good.
And it's, yeah, it's a spectacular movie, but it is, like, oddly forgettable at times, because my experience with this movie was Ellie suggested it, and I was like, sounds great, don't think I've watched that, this will be a good reason to watch that movie finally. I've definitely seen this movie before. Yeah. I started watching it, and I was like, oh, I remember the end. I've watched this at least 1.5 times. Like, I guarantee, like, I watched it, like, all the way through with my dad at some point, and then maybe some other time partway or all the way on my own, but, like, I did not remember that this was that movie until I started watching it. And then I was like, wait, I know this movie.
I have seen this
movie. I have seen this movie. I like yeah, it.
That's what I'm saying. It's one of those, like, the only other movie that, like, in my brain is in this same category for, like, me is, like, a National Treasure type of movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's good. It's action-y. It came out in the early 2000s. I have seen it all the way through. I've definitely seen parts of it more than I've seen, like, all of it. Like, I've watched chunks of it. Now, National Treasure is probably secretly my actual favorite movie. I freaking love it. It's so good. But it's in this same, like, weird film that I've definitely seen more than I, like, realized that I've seen it. Because I was watching this and I was like, I've seen this part
yeah.
a million times. And then there were other parts where I was like, I didn't even remember that happened in this movie. The entire hospital plotline, like, where his uh-huh. mom works at the hospital and
yeah,
the kid.
Yeah, she stays with the kid. Yeah,
yeah. Peter. Totally forgot that plotline existed in this film. I was just like, what happens to his mom? And the answer was, all that shit.
All of that drama, yeah.
So it's a good movie, but it's definitely full of bad ideas because otherwise we wouldn't be talking about it here. Like, right?
True.
The point.
Well, and the thing about action movies and especially disaster movies, which I guess kind of led into how I ended up forgetting this movie, because I end up watching the, like, apocalypse genre, like, a lot. I tend to watch action movies as, like, a way to relax, because a lot of times they're very plot light and you don't have to pay that much attention, and it's just, like, fun punching scenes with explosions, which is not this movie. Like, there are definitely way more movies that are like plot line, and this doesn't necessarily count as one of them because it has a really good plot and it's super cohesive and they do pour a lot of effort into characters, so it doesn't fall into the trap of the typical like punchy shooty action movie,
right?
But I've also watched a lot of them, and so sometimes this like plot kind of blended in with other apocalypse plots, with other action movies that were not as good, and I just like it's all in my head as like
it's all just there in your brain,
an action movie.
Okay, well, we should talk about the plot of this movie, because we've, like, sort of talked about the plot of this movie without actually saying a single word about the plot of this movie. And so sure. I would like to begin by complaining about the men on the ice at the beginning of the film. Because let me get this straight, Dennis Quaid. You're out there, and you're doing science. The Arctic shelf starts to break off. And your response is, yes, I will leap across this humongous and ever-widening chasm to grab our stupid ice core samples.
Which we can probably take from 5 feet to the left and have them be about the same.
Yeah. Bad idea, friend. Like, what? The movie just kicks off on a bad note.
Okay, so this movie is... it's meant as, like, a thriller. Like, it's an action movie for the most part because it's not, like, a... it's not like a psychotic sort of thriller or like a scary sort of thriller in the traditional sense.
It doesn't deal with like psychological moments necessarily.
Right. It has elements of suspense like thrillers though, in that it's you know, not just an action movie. It's deeply suspenseful at times. I could not handle myself in like the first half hour of this movie. Like stuff just kept happening, and like that thriller element of like suspense and danger, like hanging off a ever widening precipice, and you don't even know who this character is yet, so you have no idea if they're gonna die or not. Right. I could not. Like I was losing my mind. Like I think my first 5 notes on my phone are, I know this is really just an action thriller, but it feels like a horror movie to me. I don't know how I'm going to go 2 hours without having a heart attack, because I was just...
very tense.
Deeply tense, yes.
Well, because that was one thing that I, like, totally forgot, was how many people just die at the beginning of this movie. Like, they just... and, like, not... like, obviously throughout the whole movie, because the whole, like, point is, like, storm of the millennia.
Well, like, half the world dies, yeah.
Yeah, like, there's a huge, insane, like, drop in population, blah, blah, blah. And it's all kind of implied, like, we don't necessarily see most of those people dying. But at the beginning, it's very much like, man with a name, who is a news reporter, gets smacked by a billboard. Guy who is a weatherman gets ripped out of his building. Like... people screaming and running down the street get sucked up by tornado. Like, it's very, like, in your face, which is interesting to me because I feel like then there's, like, a huge tonal shift. Because for the rest of the movie, like, I guess later the people from the library who leave and don't listen to Jake Gyllenhaal's character who has a name that I don't remember.
Which, one, bad idea. Just throwing that out there.
Yeah. Don't do this thing. If you're ever in this situation and a man is like, my dad is a climate scientist, don't leave.
Well, that's the thing, is that it wasn't just a kid voicing an opinion. He was like, no, like, here's my source. Like, he works for the government. Like, this is the advice, you know? Like, it's not...
they don't were working
off
thing.
They were working off of rumor that other people were evacuating, you know?
Right.
Which is true south of them.
And not
like,
a good
in a
idea
very different situation.
New York City at this point. But so, like, you know, we know those people die. And you, like, kind of see, like, the frozen people
and
on the
streets.
And it's
an emotional pull. Like, you care about them at that point, and you're like, okay, like, this is an emotional tug of, like, they didn't actually make it.
But it's not quite as, like, viscerally in your face as, like, the beginning of the movie. And I thought that that was interesting, and, like, it's not, I guess it's, I maybe wouldn't go so far as to call it, like, a bad idea, but it's like a weird idea, kind of, that we're like, doom and gloom and destruction and murder, and then it's like, and now it's people in a library.
I think part of it was that the tone shifted along with the weather, so their whole point was that, like, this is just, it's extreme, and then you slide into this ice age. So it's like all this super extreme weather, and then just this deep cold that will kill people.
Yeah.
You know, and it, so it was a different type of danger. And so since they had to move along with that, you know, it wouldn't have made as much sense to have, like, New York City freezing over and that be what the main characters are facing. But LA is still getting ripped apart by tornadoes and that's somehow also happening. Like, I think they wanted to, like, put forth the point that, like, everywhere is in danger of some kind of disaster before they honed in on the disaster that was gonna be the plot of the movie.
Yeah. Well, and I guess there's also the, like, different, like, a deep freeze is a much less immediate disaster. Like,
yes.
It isn't, it's destructive and scary, but it's not as, like...
It's not a tornado suddenly ripping apart half a building destructive and scary. Yeah.
It's, yeah.
They're very different.
It's more of a, like, slow, creeping, like,
yeah, scary. It's less of an immediate disaster and more of a survival story, when you frame them.
Yes.
Because the most of the movie is that survival story. It's, we know that things are gonna get worse. How do we make it until they are slightly better? Instead of, like, the beginning, which is just an Arctic shelf is falling off.
Floodwaters
are, like, yeah, massive whooshing walls of water are just rushing through parts of the country.
Yeah,
tornadoes are ripping apart buildings. Like, that's a very immediate, like, here's danger, and it's right now, and people's chance of survival is basically down to luck. Whereas, like, the rest of the movie is, like, how are we dedicating ourselves to surviving in this time?
Right. I think that's an excellent point. I think the interesting thing for me about, like, some of the I don't know what the word is, the danger is that, like, it's, like, an in-movie but also real-life bad idea is that,
right.
Like, so we know all this danger is coming, right? Like, as soon as they start to notice it, Dennis Quaid is like, evacuate New York!
Here's what's gonna happen.
Yeah, and, like, everybody's just like, nah. And then New York gets blown to smithereens by waves and stuff, and it's bad. And it's interesting, like, it is an interesting kind of parallel to people who don't believe that the climate is in danger.
For sure. And, we're gonna talk more about that in our ultimate bad idea, so don't worry that we seem oblivious to it in these smaller bad ideas. We are
well aware.
We know.
But, like, within the movie,
yes.
Like, it's a terrible idea, and it's also terribly frustrating because they have that whole, like, climate summit, and all of the other people are like, yes, you are right, Dennis Quaid, and then the vice president is like, the economy. And then, you know. Although, I do really like the vice president's growth as a character because, like, he does a really good... It's super interesting because at the end of the movie, he does come back and be like, we were wrong. Like, this is not...
Yeah.
Like, we're going to have to learn from this and, like, move forward. And it was, like, really heartening to see, like, his shift
right.
from, like, no climate problems, everything is fine, to being like, we were not correct and we are in a new position and we have to learn, like... We all have to realize we were wrong and we made mistakes, and I made those mistakes too, and now, like, these are the things we're going to have to do to try to correct them. And I really, like, appreciated that message.
The thing I liked about that, too, is that his character arc was believable. It wasn't like, because he held out until the last moment. Like, he was still very sort of deny, we can't. What are we going to do? We can't evacuate half the country to Mexico. Are you kidding me? Like, how much money would that cost? What would that do to the economy? And they're like, this is what you said before.
Right.
And here's where we are now. New York is dead.
New York, like, is gone. There is no
right.
longer Los
and
Angeles.
And he had that moment where he couldn't say anything because anything he said would make him sound like an idiot. And he was thinking about that for the very first time. And you could, like, see that.
Yeah.
And, like, he never was super humble. Like, the end was still very much a person in a political position saying what needed said. But you could tell he also believed it.
Yeah.
You know, and that was, like, so I found it believable, you know?
Right.
It wasn't just, like, stuff goes wrong and suddenly he's like, wow, I super believe in climate change. Like, it was like, no, like, half of the country died before he, like, got on board.
Right.
And it took a lot of really extreme circumstances for him to believe that, you know, what these people were saying was true, which is
right.
sad, but realistic in the sense
right.
of the character that he is.
Well, and it was, like, it's just interesting because at the end of the movie, he actually ends up being, like, better leader for it, kind of, which I thought was like because, like, exactly like you were saying, he doesn't necessarily, like, become very, like, humble, and he's not super, like, ooh and blah, but he, like, admits he was wrong and still is willing to be like, and now we have to do what's next, which I think
yes.
is really hard to do when you, like, have realized that you're wrong. So I thought that was really interesting that
no,
he was like,
for sure,
written that way. Sorry that I've derailed us to talk about the vice president. I just think he's an interesting guy.
I would agree with you that wasn't a bad idea, that was well done. I think the bad idea with him is obviously all the mistakes he makes as a character, but also just so many people don't listen to Dennis Quaid.
Yeah, man.
Like, so many. That's just always a bad idea. Like, anybody who doesn't listen to him is immediately enacting a bad idea.
Yeah. Listen to Dennis Quaid.
Because he knows what's up.
Because he did the science, man. He was the science man.
And, like, he has the skills, too. Like, he's been out in the Arctic. Like, he's seen stuff firsthand. It's not like he's just sitting in a room looking at models. He's, like, using models to prove what he knows is true, you know?
Yes.
Like, and people still are like, eh.
Hey, on the subject of, like, doing science and models and stuff, can we talk about the myriad terrible weather science individuals in this film?
Because yes.
Bad ideas left, right, and center with those peeps, right? We've got the English guy who done falls asleep at his desk, and then he and his compatriot are like, oh, this wooden bobber is reading very low. Must be broken. Ho, ho, ho. And then they just, like, ignore it.
Right. And they don't mention it to their boss when he walks in the door literally the next minute and is like, hey, what's up? And they're like, nothing. They don't even mention the curiosity of one of their bobbers is probably malfunctioning. Because I get thinking that, like, a ridiculously low-level bobber is probably...
temperature is probably
absolutely, that's it. Yeah, that's probably a mechanical issue. But, like, you still mention that so that you can fix it. Or at least make notes, like...
Yeah, at least be like, maybe we should fix that next time we can get somebody out there to fix, you know?
Yeah, or, hey boss, this one bobber's reading real weird. What do you think that is? You know, just anything. Instead of just like, that doesn't matter.
This is fine. Whatever. Okay, so the English scientists, they do a bad thing. And then we come, like, almost as far as humanly possible from these scientists in Scotland. And we go to the LA weatherman, who is also supposed to be monitoring things, and is instead blinking his wife, and then they die, because they're not paying attention.
Well, that's the thing, is that, like, with these weather people, what I don't get is that weird weather had already been established at that point. Like, especially with the LA guy.
Yes!
Like, he's a weatherman at a night shift, granted, but, like, also,
the tornado
was. The whole country has had, like, the weirdest weather possible, and it has killed multiple people already. I would think that you'd be paying attention to the weather.
Yeah.
Like, this isn't some normal Saturday. Like, the only news you've heard so far has been, the weather is whack.
Hey, there's something going on. There have been tornado warnings in Los Angeles. We saw a funnel cloud here in Los Angeles.
The place where you predict the weather. Like, yeah, what are you doing?
They're doing a bad job, man. I don't know. It's crazy town. And I just, like, I don't know.
Yeah, we have one climatologist who's not a meteorologist, but he knows his stuff. And then every, like, basic meteorologist has no concept of how to do their job.
Or, I guess, the one old guy in Scotland, like, knows
what's up.
Yeah,
the leader of...
He didn't even know that he needed to know what was up.
Exactly.
And that's a bad idea.
No, his stuff is good. Like, it's really well established that he knows what he's talking about, which makes it a doubly bad idea for, like, his employees not to actually inform him of weird weather changes.
Right?
Like, if he's measuring changes in climate, just tell him when stuff changes, even if you think it's a malfunction. Like, this is still, he's in charge. He needs to know what's up.
Yeah, I think that in this movie, there's a lot of very, like, laissez-faire approaches to things that should not be approached laissez-faire.
Yes.
Like, there's this whole scene in the zoo, the Central Park Zoo, I think, where, like, all the animals start flipping their business, and the zookeepers are just like, oh, this is weird. And not being like, animals tend to know when weather is gonna do weird stuff. Perhaps we should be moderately concerned.
Yeah, or even, like, concerned on the animals' behalf, because everybody I know who works in zoos is, like, the ultimate animal behavioralist. Like, that's what they're very into. Like, they know a lot of shit about how animals behave and why. And so all of them going crazy, every zoo worker would immediately be like, dear God, what is happening? Is this environmental?
How can we fix this?
We need to study it. What is happening? Like, they, even if they didn't go immediately to weather, like, they would be concerned. It wouldn't just be this, like, I don't know. All of them are acting up. Guess the animals are
freaking out. I don't know.
No, like, everybody who works at a zoo would immediately be on, like, code red. Like, oh god, why is this happening?
I don't want the animals in the zoo to die, right? Like, I don't. Yeah. This is not what I want. But how bad are their cages that the wolves just leave?
Yeah. Like, the wolves just... That got me, too.
Leave.
Like, I get in a panic, animals doing more than expected, but that's literally what containers like that are built for. Like, they are built for, if a bear goes berserk, would it still be contained?
Right.
Yes or no?
And the answer, apparently, at the Central Park Zoo is no.
No.
So maybe don't visit that zoo, I guess, is what we've taken away here. Like, and also, yeah. Why are the wolves the only ones that escape? Like, what about the other animals?
Right.
Why is only the wolf enclosure terrible? I have so many questions about
it. For plot reasons, I suppose. But, like, yeah, like, if I could think of an animal that would be able to break containment by, like, going crazy because they know that something is happening, wolves might not actually be it. I would expect the elephants to be out.
Yeah.
And, like, the rhinos and the hippos, like, the real heavy hitters. The things that, like, that can stampede and just burst through everything.
Is the implication just that, like, all of those animals already froze to death, but wolves are used to the tundra anyway? And if so, where is my herd of penguins? Did the wolves eat them all? Like...
Yeah, well, and, like, the bear was still contained in that same shot.
Yeah, it was very bizarre.
I don't get that. And that doesn't make sense.
I love my dog. And dogs in general, and they're wolves, but small. And...
Yes.
They're not that smart. Like... They're smart enough. They do their thing, but they're not, yeah, like, brilliant escape artists for the most part.
Well, that's the thing, is that, like, the wolves working as a pack to attack the kids while they're trying to get the medicine.
Oh yeah, that's totally believable.
That part checks out, because that's, like, the level of intelligence you expect from a wolf pack.
Right.
The escape artistry of, like...
They Houdini their way out of the zoo, like...
They somehow manage to just slip out of containment. Like, what?
How? It's not like they can pick locks. I'm haunted by these wolves. It just, like, I get that it's, like, just for the drama of it all, but also, like, you didn't give them a very good reason for being on the loose, and it bugs me a lot. And I just can't.
I have a small bad idea on the wolf segment.
Hit me with the
wolves.
They,
when they're, like, trying to escape the wolves in the ship or whatever.
Yes, yes, they're in the Russian boat.
Yeah, there's that point where the main character, like, takes an axe from the wall and then goes outside on, like, that very perilous, like, narrow pipe.
Yes, he goes on his journey.
Yes,
to
get in, to get in the other room so that he can open the room from the inside. This isn't during the wolves haven't even happened yet at this point. This is, like,
oh,
right,
yes,
before
yes, yes,
wolves.
Yes, yes, we're pre-wolf.
Why did he not just use the axe on the front of that door? Because he broke through the door on the other side with the axe also. Like, why was going outside necessary at that point? Because he's gonna have the perilous outside thing with the wolves later anyways. And that makes sense because you're trying to, like, circumvent wolves.
Yeah,
but,
right.
But, like, the first part...
Couldn't he just have chopped the door?
Couldn't he just have used the axe on the front part of the door instead of going outside, breaking in the middle, breaking in the back, and then opening the door with the axe? Like, I did not understand.
Yeah. Yeah, that doesn't make a ton of sense. Oh, is that the door that they end up having to shut against the wolves, though? Because
yeah.
Maybe it was just, like, a generic plot device to be like, well, we know later he will need this door, so we cannot bust it.
But he busts it from the inside, is what I'm saying.
I don't
know. Is that, like, it's not like he goes on the outside and then it's unlocked from the inside.
Oh, right, he
does
still break it.
He still breaks open the door. Like, just break open the front of the door.
I have no idea.
It's gonna be the same. It was this one little loop that took up time that I was like, why are we doing this?
What is happening?
Because, like, you have plenty of that done when the wolves are attacking, and that
right.
makes sense because you're trying to beat off wolves or sneak past wolves or distract wolves or, like, any part of the
wolf-based
plot
lines.
Yes.
As opposed to just, like, we're doing this because it looks badass. Like,
right. I think it was, like, to add tension because you know the wolves are coming, but they don't yet. And the outside is a little bit of tension anytime they go outside to, like, do a thing. But, like,
yeah.
It was
outdoors
also
scary.
Deeply unnecessary.
Yeah.
Like, you could have added tension in many other ways, I believe, than doing this weird roundabout door thing.
Being outside, knowing the freezing winds are a-coming, is
yes.
pretty ding-dang tense.
No, and especially at the end where they're beating the freeze back in, like, you know that's coming. Like, you can, like,
see it.
It's well established that, like, this is
the end if you don't make it inside. This is it,
and yeah, we gotta get this done now, or we're done for.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Yeah, plenty of drama in that scene without this weird door opening thing that really could have been done from the inside using the exact same tool.
It's a bad scene. So the reason that they have to brave these dangerous wolves and this cold boat, we need to discuss. Because...
Yes.
Because, come on, friends. So we go, the water, it's a flooding. Laura saves the French-speaking family in the taxi. And then she goes back for the lady's purse because her passport's in it or something.
Yeah.
I would say, you know, the danger is happening. I think your embassy could sort that out later. But whatever, right. I guess.
It was small, very much idea. It was very much a bad idea born of, like, not fully realizing how much danger is at hand.
Yeah, I guess that's true. But then...
Which is the whole beginning of the movie, is nobody actually realizing just how much danger is at hand.
I just, yeah. But then, so, she goes stumbling back through the waters on the streets, and she rips her pants leg on a car somehow, right? And she, like, gets the deep, deep scratch. And then she gets sepsis. Who lets a scratch go that long? Like, it wasn't... I mean, it was deep, but it's not like she chopped an arm off. Like, it was just a cut. You could have done something. This is why we don't hide our injuries, Laura!
It was a deep cut made in floodwaters, which, yes, probably are not the, like, not good. Like,
I can see an infection,
yes, happening that way. But the thing is that, like, after you have that, and after you're in the library and you're in a stable position, which they got to, you know, at that point, the freeze wasn't even really happening. Like, they were just with a bunch of other people in the library.
Right.
Clean your damn wound.
Yeah, just like, take a minute.
The library still has
bathrooms. Water.
Like, yeah, like.
And soap.
Exactly. Like, that's the thing, is that you're not lacking in the basic supplies to clean a wound. Right. And since it really is just a deep scratch, hand soap and clean water would have been fine.
Probably suffice. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right?
And then, you know, you clean your clothes area around that. You clean off your jeans in the same way, and you're good. Like, it's not going to get that bad of an infection to where, like, they need to go brave the freeze and the wolves to get medicine. Like, that should not have been necessary, because you should have just cleaned any scratches you got.
Right.
In, like, the bathroom.
And she's a ding dang smart. Like, the whole point is that they're there for, like, brain bowl.
Yes.
Or whatever. Like, you'd think that she'd be like, perhaps I should take a moment and clean my leg. But she doesn't. And then she gets sepsis. Because she's a fool, I guess. It kind of makes me mad that she got, like, it wasn't even just like, oh, the cut on your leg is infected. She waited until she had sepsis, which is intense. Like,
Well, and there were so many opportunities to fix that, is the thing. Because she mentions that her leg is hurting to the other girl earlier. And, like, that's how the girl knows to have them check her leg.
Right.
When she's, like, dying. But also, like, at that point,
just put some soap in it.
Go, and it's, they're never at a loss for water, because after the floods and stuff, so with the freeze, your pipes are frozen, you're not going to have the water in the bathrooms. You have all the snow outside.
Yeah, you could probably get some clean snow.
Speaking as somebody who has had no water in her house for a full week during the middle of winter, snow melt happens. Like, it's easy. Go outside, get some snow. Yeah, they could have just opened the window, let some dump in, and then closed the window again. Like,
easy peasy, y'all.
And you have water. And it's, you know, that's not really touched upon in the movie, because that's obviously not an issue of theirs. Like, water is not a thing they're concerned about. They're concerned about having enough food. They're concerned about having enough heat. They're not concerned about having enough water. So it's obvious that she had multiple opportunities. Throughout the time of realizing that this cut is there, and also is bad, and hurts, that she could have washed it out.
Just life, this is a new life rule. If you are living through an apocalyptic scenario, and you get a seemingly minor injury, still take a minute to put some soap on it. Don't die of sepsis.
It's even if you're not in an apocalypse, if you go hiking and get scratched, and forget about it, wash it off when you come home.
Yeah, or... if it starts to hurt a little bit and you're like, that's sore and kind of red, I'm gonna put some Neosporin on it. Like, just please.
Anything.
Just don't die of sepsis because you're stupid.
Please clean your wounds.
Don't die of sepsis because you're an idiot. That's all I want. Just don't die of sepsis. It's so easy to not die of sepsis from a wound. Like, it's so... It is, I would argue, it is easier to not die of sepsis from a minor wound than it is to die of sepsis from a minor wound. So don't do that. Don't take the hard route.
I also want to point out another, like, in-character bad idea.
Yes.
And this, I was reminded by thinking of her going back through the, like, the flooded cars to get the passport or whatever.
Right.
And this is one of many bad ideas that I had through the movie that I want to just put a disclaimer out there that I understand why they happened. Like, the characters have accurate motivations for doing any of these bad ideas. For doing the things they do.
Yeah.
And if I were in their situation, I might do the same. It just doesn't take away from it being a bad idea.
Yes.
And one of these is when the main character, I still forget his name. He's
Jake Gyllenhaal.
Yep.
We're just calling him Jake Gyllenhaal.
That's fine. That's it. He's cool. Anyways. He goes down to, like the subway to use the phones because there's no phones in the library and he needs to get in touch with his dad.
And the cell phone towers have already been,
the cell phone towers have, been knocked over and all that stuff. So he goes down to use the landlines but the subway's already been flooded. So he's kind of, like, wading through floodwaters to get to these phones, and the floodwaters are rising.
Yes.
And, like, again, the tension here is on purpose. He has a decent motivation, and plot-wise it's very necessary because that's the phone call in which his dad tells him to stay and stay warm and not move, and that actually saves their lives. Right. So I get why this happened.
Yes.
It's still a bad idea, especially being on the phone with your dad and not telling him, hey dad, first off, floodwaters are rising, I'm only on the phone for a couple minutes.
Like, you have exactly 2 minutes to tell me everything.
He never once mentioned that, and at the end he has to just abandon the phone, and his poor parents are like, did he just die?
Right.
Like, there's, because he never mentioned the situation under which he was calling.
Yeah, just,
And he ditches the phone so late enough that, you know, his girlfriend's wondering if he's even gonna
alive
come back. Yeah. Yes. And so all of that is just a bad idea, and I understand why it happened in terms of the movie, and I understand why his character did it, but it's still a deeply bad idea.
Yeah, I'm not opposed to him using the phone, but, like, just mention, you know, hey, problem, you need to talk really, really fast because I'm standing in 5 feet of floodwater and there are only 6 more inches of my head before I die. So yes.
And then abandoning the phone earlier also would have been good. Like, yeah, once your dad gives you the info, here's how to survive, you're like, okay, bye.
Okay, the water is coming up, I gotta go, bye, I love you.
Right, exactly. Like, which would be fairly automatic. I think we've all been on phone calls, well, not under such dangerous circumstances, but also, I don't know why I put the emphasis on it like that.
But she got the emphasis on the wrong syllable.
I did, and I do that a lot in this podcast. I don't know why this
medium
is particular to that. Anyways,
you know what you mean?
I feel like we've all been on the phone with a parent or a family member and, like, needed to go real quick and just done that quick one-sentence explanation, I love you, goodbye.
Yeah.
And, like, I feel like that would be a very natural thing to happen when you're about to be swallowed up by floodwaters, is just, hey, dad, I love you a lot, say hi to mom, like, I've gotta go, bye, like, anything to sign off. Like,
any kind of, like, ending that isn't just like, all right, I'm dying now.
Yeah, I'm listening to you and then I'm in the water. Like, yeah.
It seems dumb. So if we're gonna talk about bad choices people make in regards to the, like, changing weather danger, can we talk about Dennis Quaid and his two compatriots who go off on a cross-country quest? I guess it's not cross-country. They're really only coming from D.C. to New York, which isn't, like, that far. But Dennis Quaid knows that this storm is gonna last maybe 2 days.
Yes.
And to drive from Washington, D.C. to New York is like, I think a train can make it in 4 hours. Like, it's not that much. So if he had just been like, I'm going to wait until the storm slows, and then I will take off on a snowmobile and retrieve my son.
He might have gotten there about the same time.
Yeah. Like, it wouldn't even have been any different. It's like in Home Alone, when Kevin's mom has to ride in the budget rent-a-van with the polka band, and they get home, and then 2 seconds later, the rest of the family gets home.
Like, right. And like, again, like, this is,
I get it.
Yeah, this is one of, this is, like, pretty much the other bad idea where I was like, I thoroughly understand motivations. Like,
yeah,
as a parent,
yeah, of course.
his child is in danger. He knows that stuff is bad enough that an hour or two of him being there or not might actually mean his son lives or dies. Like, because he comes prepared, which is another, that's going to lead into another bad idea. I got to talk about their road trip with him and his quote unquote preparedness. But like,
yes,
but like, you know, he comes with equipment, you know, like tents, yeah, and stuff to light fires with. Like, he comes with the ability to save the kids if they're not surviving on their own. And he shows up and they have been. But there's, you know, I can see how as a parent, he's like, I promised my son I would get there.
I'm leaving now.
I'm literally going to get there or die trying. Like,
right.
I get that.
Right.
But it's still
a bad idea.
It's still a bad idea.
I totally agree. He has, like, complete motivation. And, like, I can't honestly say that I wouldn't, like, also do that and be like, no, I'm leaving now. Goodbye.
Right.
It's always so challenging to watch because, like, logically, you're like, but if you just had given it, then your friend probably wouldn't have died in an abandoned shopping mall. Like,
well, and that's the thing is that their trip is not bereft of tragedy. Like, it had, like, that one of their good long-term friends literally sacrifices himself so that they all don't die.
Yeah.
And, like, that is extreme. And, like, for that, and that is the ultimate sacrifice. And for that sacrifice to have to happen when, like you said, you know that the kids are doing okay, and they would have been able to wait, you know, until the storm was over for his dad to find them. Like, that's hard.
It was very hard to watch. Because
you feel like that tragedy didn't necessarily need to happen.
Yeah.
And so it was just extra painful. But, like, in their position,
they don't know that.
They don't know that. And so, like, you get it, but it still feels like a bad idea because they're going through all of this stuff and, like, one of them, like, gets hit on the head and passes out, or like, both times. Like, he gets, like, a deep head injury.
Dennis, like, has to haul him through, like, the snows.
Like, through the roof of a Wendy's so that he, like, doesn't die.
So they can light some oil on fire. Like,
exactly, yeah. And so, there's, you know, it's extreme, and it's part of what makes the movie so good, you know, there's constant tension and all that. But also, like, yeah, just, like,
it's very hard to watch.
That trip was a bad idea. And it's
it's so hard to watch.
I have to just say that, like, so they were prepared. They've done studies in the Arctic. Like, they're scientists that have roughed it in very cold temperatures. So they have the gear and they have the knowledge. That's obvious when they're, like, roped together. They're used to low visibility. They have the tent and everything. But by the same token, they tried to take a car into, like, a storm so bad that, like, multi-story buildings were covered in snow. Which they knew, because that was their whole prediction, is that, like, this has just been cycling over here and dumping snow the whole time, and the temperatures are frigid, like, it's the Arctic.
Right.
So, like, I don't understand why they didn't, like, bring a snow cap. Or, like, take a car that was, like, a truck that could haul things, and then when the car could no longer go, then they could hop in the four-wheeler and do it. Like, there are multiple vehicles that are meant for snow.
For snow travel. It is not the one
they
chose.
It's not this car. It's not this car that even questionably had four-wheel drive. Like, it was a very normal-looking car.
It was just a car.
It was just a car. Also, they keep their face masks down sometimes when they're talking, and that's just actors, not having Arctic experience. But as somebody who
has been frigid,
like, literally only just skis a lot, like, that's my only experience, but, like, it's when it is that cold, there's no way that you are lowering any part of your, like, no part of your skin can be uncovered, because there's no way. And I'm saying that as, like, going out to ski when it's, like, negative, but, like, this is something else.
This is a whole different... Gasoline is freezing into helicopters.
I should not see your mouth, like, at this point, because you would be dead.
Yeah, this would be bad. You would have a frozen lung.
Exactly. Like, I don't... That was a small bad idea, but it occurred to me in the middle of all that, and I was like, why?
This is still a bad idea.
You're supposed to look prepared.
They're not prepared.
They are not prepared.
They were not ready. All right. So we're going to hit that ultimate bad idea. I think it's time. We've run out of many bad ideas. Though there are many, many,
many
bad ideas in this film. But one thing that, like, we often do on this here podcast is talk about the sort of, like, real life implications of the movies and the bad ideas they're in. And this film has quite the real life bad idea implication. And so let us discuss that ultimate bad idea, ignoring extreme shifts in the climate, and the scientists that have spent their careers studying the aforementioned climate and ignoring them and not doing anything to you know, not die in a weather incident.
Yeah. So like Ellie said, oftentimes we end up with the real life stuff, and this seemed an obvious one. I mean, aside from the fact that if you would touch upon it in any media, it would be the ultimate bad idea, irrevocably pushing the environment to a level where nature then rebounds in a way that kills millions of people.
Yes.
Is a bad idea.
Yeah, yeah, don't do this thing.
And this movie, that's the whole point. The whole premise of this apocalypse is that it's a realistic look, just time framed forward. Like, so instead of happening to your children's children's children, it's
the
happening
day
to
after
you.
Tomorrow.
It's, yes, it's happening to you right now. And so that's, you know, the ultimate bad idea is made quite obvious in the movie, because the movie is basically a warning video about what could happen if we continue to ignore the truth in front of us. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that you mentioned like a really excellent point about it being sort of like realistic, because one thing that I thought, like, I noticed that was really not a bad idea, was really good about this movie, is that the apocalypse imagery in this movie isn't as overblown as the apocalypse imagery in a lot of movies are. Mm-hmm. Like, it is very much like, you know, Los Angeles looked like that town in Missouri that got messed up by all
the
tornadoes a few years ago.
I don't remember the name, but I know what you're talking
right?
about.
But the scenes in LA, they look like that. And the snow in New York is higher than the snow
in the flood water with the wave that we is but, not seen. But like, you've
but
seen...
But we have seen a tsunami, right? Like,
yeah.
People
you've seen
in,
waves that high in hurricane season. Like,
yeah, and in... There was the big one in Japan that took out the nuclear reactor, and there's
yes.
been... there was another place, and I can't remember where it was, but like, a boatload of people died, and I feel like it was somewhere in Southeast Asia, and I can't remember, but like, tsunamis that are wildly unpredictable and huge aren't questionable. Like, you can't question their existence. They happen. And,
yes.
like, it snowed in Texas last year. Like, it's not
yeah.
out of the realm of possibility.
No, everything that they showed is thoroughly realistic. Just, like, put in places you wouldn't expect it to be for the impact of, like, it seems exaggerated, it seems extreme, because it's happening here instead of somewhere in a different country on the news, or in a
right.
milder form somewhere in the US.
Right. Right. It's just, it's, I feel like a lot of apocalypse movies tend to go for like, and then everything explodes and everything is bad. But this one is very much like, no, it just snows a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I think that that's super realistic. And again, like, we've been listing all of these places where like, it does happen. It's not out of the realm of possibility. It's
yeah.
totally plausible. Like,
well, and I appreciate that they showed that the danger is sometimes not just the extreme, like a tornado's hitting a city. It snowed a lot.
Yeah,
and that's a
it
and
got
that's a danger
really
that yeah, that's a danger that people consistently underplay. They're like, well, if it gets a little bit colder in New York, what's it going to matter? And it's like, well, it's going to matter to all the people who can't afford to stay warm.
Right. It's going to matter to the people who don't, if, like, oh, well, there's a tornado in Los Angeles, like, whatever, but people in Los Angeles aren't prepared for tornadoes, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
it's, I'm going to take, like, a weird side journey here, but, like, we need to talk about it, because you were talking about people who can't afford to stay warm, and, like, yeah, there is a question of socioeconomic, like, equality there, and there's also the, like, sheer fact of... So I was watching BuzzFeed Unsolved, and there was an episode this season where one of the hosts is actually from Chicago and, like, moved to LA. Well, he's mm-hmm. from somewhere in, like, near Chicago. And then the other one has lived in LA, like, his whole life. And they're talking about tornado sirens. And, like, the one who's from Chicago is like, yeah, they just go off every Friday at 11, and we just know it's there. And everybody
right.
goes, that's the tornado siren. And then when we hear it not Friday at 11, we all go, that is the tornado siren, and we must hide.
Yes.
Versus, like... If that happens in a city that's not prepared for it, right? Like,
yeah.
Are there tornado sirens every Friday at 11 in Colorado, Jesse?
No, there are not. And I was about to talk about that because
right.
I had not experienced the, like, weekly tornado siren until I moved to Muncie,
right.
Indiana, where we went to college. And so, because growing up, I lived close enough to the mountains that we didn't get tornadoes. You get tornadoes in Colorado, but you get them in the part of the Colorado that looks like Kansas. Like, you
right.
get them in far, like, eastern Colorado, but if you're near the Rockies, or even
not so
further
much.
To the west, you have more canyons. So, like, it's not, it's really uncommon. Like, I think we had one tornado near, like, Denver Boulder area a couple years ago, and it obviously made the news and stuck in my head because that's the only one I've heard of.
Right.
It's so, like, it was, if we had them, if we had tornadoes in the mountains, people wouldn't know what to do who haven't, you know, lived in other places or been around places where tornadoes happen.
Well, and, like, the infrastructure isn't prepared for that.
No.
You don't have tornado sirens versus the reason they go off every Friday here is we have to make sure they're still working so that when the tornadoes come in, we can all get out of Dodge.
And so that people are familiar with what a tornado siren sounds like versus an ambulance siren or a, you know, police siren or whatever.
It's, yeah, it's so, so like, one, yeah, New York gets snow, but if it gets colder, people aren't going to have access to the things to keep them alive. And if the weather starts getting out of whack, people just aren't ready, right? We had earthquakes in Indiana a few years ago, and it was buck wild because we've only ever had two in the 25 years I've been alive and living in this state. Like, it's when things are different, people don't know what to do. Like, when you're not, and you can't be prepared for every disaster all the time, always.
No, well, and part of the thing that this movie showed so well was that, like, the idea of evacuation does not save everybody.
Yes.
It only saves some people. And that's the thing is that I kept thinking throughout the movie that, you know, you can, should New York have been evacuated when he suggested it? Yes. People still would have died, though, because you cannot evacuate a city of that magnitude in that time frame. And that's the thing is that the solution to this was not evacuation. Evacuation only saved some people.
Right.
The solution would have been to have done something about it earlier.
Yeah. You know, prevent the evacuation from becoming a necessity. Well, shoot. I mean, we can talk about Hurricane Katrina, right? Part of the reason it killed so many people is, one, it was one of the worst hurricanes on record, right? It
yes.
was more intense than many have been.
Two, which, again, similar to these extreme
weather
circumstances
events. Yes,
that they're showing.
Yes. Thank you for... Yes. Two, they did try to evacuate New Orleans, and people couldn't leave, right?
Yep.
People literally couldn't get out. Like, it was too... There were too many people trying to leave. Or people couldn't get out because they couldn't afford it. Or people couldn't get out because of myriad reasons. Or, I mean, there's always going to be the people who... didn't
decide
leave.
Not to yeah
right. And like that's a bad choice, but like there's also like, can you mitigate the need for that? And the answer is, of course, you just haven't.
Right. And I think that this movie showed some of that in part. You know, they didn't really focus on the evacuation as much because they were focusing more on the survival aspect of the people who had to stay where they were.
Right.
But when they did show evacuation stuff, they showed some of those aspects. Like, the whole plot arc with his mom having to stay with Peter in the hospital because there wasn't an ambulance to take Peter, and Peter cannot go without medical equipment.
Right, well, and he can't go without his parents because he's a child, and they couldn't get a hold of the parents.
Right. Like, there's literally, there are so many reasons that she had to stay, even when everybody else left.
Right.
And so, and it was just one example, but it was the movie kind of showing you, like, when evacuations happen, people are left behind. And it's not for a reason that you immediately think of. Sometimes it is a child in the hospital and his nurse staying with him because there's no way she can leave without him, and he can't leave.
The president of the stinking United States in this movie does not survive because he is maintaining operations from, like, of the evacuation from the Oval Office for as long as he can, and then when they finally evacuate, it's too late.
So yeah, like, his plane goes down. Yeah, like,
there are all sorts of things that happen in this film to people who do even try to evacuate, right? So, like, you see, of course, like, there's people who can't, like the people in New York. And then there's people who can and do and are in the process of, but for reasons beyond their control, it's not working, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's unfathomable to me that this movie is 16 years old, I think, and that we still have most of the same discussions today.
For sure. Well, and that's... I talked earlier about this feeling like a horror movie because of all the tension, but also there was an edge to that. An edge to this is almost... too real and almost painfully real.
Yes.
Because we've known this. We've known this since we were children, and now we're full-grown adults, and it's still something that you have to fight tooth and nail to get any consideration for in our government. And there's still so many people who think it's fiction. And, like, is this movie fictionalized?
Of course.
Absolutely. But is it based on truth? Yes.
Yes.
It's a cautionary tale in the typical sense of all cautionary tales, where it takes something true and tells you the worst case scenario so that you know the truth of the danger.
It's interesting to me because, like, one thing that I, like, noticed about the movie was that a lot of the science actually sounds very much like science that's
yes.
real. Like, the way that they talk about, like, I mean, clearly, currently, climate scientists aren't predicting that the ocean temperatures are going to drop by 14 degrees Celsius out of nowhere.
Right, no.
But the idea that changes in the temperature of the ocean affect the way that the weather patterns exist in the world is, I mean...
True.
And shown, and, like, we've seen it in, like, the way that, like, hurricane seasons are changing. The fact that, like, just the weather itself is, like, storms have become more extreme.
Floods have become more extreme and common. Fires have become more extreme and common.
Right.
Tornadoes have become more extreme, especially, right?
Yes. I was watching a video on social media somewhere where this person was, like, it was, like, a me from March talking to me from January, and they were like, well, surely the thing from this year that everybody's going to remember is the Australian brush fires. And I mean, no, because...
No.
But...
Because COVID, yeah.
But, yeah, surely the thing that everybody's going to remember from this year would have been...
Would have been an entire continent catching fire.
Right! If the whole world hadn't had, you know, the Rona.
A global pandemic. Right, and that's the thing, is that so many of these things, they're the most extreme that's ever happened until something more extreme happens.
Yes.
And I remember this about hurricanes even just growing up. Like, it used to be that, like there was the one bad hurricane. Katrina was huge. But
right.
It was the only thing we'd ever heard of as far as, like, that magnitude.
Right.
And I think, like, a couple years ago, they were, like, three.
Yeah.
And so, like, yes, culturally, Katrina still topped because... It was the first time it had happened, and it's going to linger in people's memories. But nobody remembers any of the names of those three hurricanes that swept through and did unfathomable amounts of damage, flooded cities, and killed people. Because at that point, it was normalized. And that's the way with all this extreme weather, is that, like, people can keep denying climate change because it normalizes itself because of the way that the human mind works and because of the way that our media covers it and because of the way this, that, and the other. You know, there's...
Yeah, you just kind of get used to it.
You have to get used to it. That's how human beings work. But people are using that as a reason to not care about it. And if you look at it objectively, shit is bad.
At times is not great. It's... So... Yeah. I don't know. Science is cool, man. Maybe we should... Listen,
not end on such a downer.
Oh, okay, I can end on not a downer, because let me tell you, okay, science is cool, and we should listen to scientists, and it stresses me out that we're not, but man, the end of this movie is one of my favorite final shots of any film ever, and I'm gonna end on this extremely, like, I love this movie, because it is such a downer, and it is, this could happen the day after tomorrow, but the end of the movie is all of the survivors from the library in a helicopter, and as they're flying out of New York, they start seeing other survivors emerge onto the rooftops of the buildings, like other people who made it. And I love that the end of this movie isn't, ugh, doom. It's even if something bad happens, even if something of this magnitude occurs, if we have this apocalyptic event, there are survivors. Like, there's still
yes.
cause for hope. Like, human beings, that's what we do, right? Like, we pull up in the warmth and we wait it out and we figure out the ways to not all
we adapt
die.
And we survive and we band together again when we can. Yeah.
Right.
I think that absolutely the ending of this movie is iconic. It was one of the few things I actually did remember once I was like, oh, I know this movie.
I have seen this movie.
I've seen the end of it because the end is so good and it's, you know, it doesn't downplay what's happened, but it doesn't take a nihilistic viewpoint on it at all. It's like, here's everybody who's surviving in Mexico. Here's everybody who was able to go rescue people in New York. Here's us taking stock of the people who survived, the people who adapted, and the path forward.
Yes.
And it's very good in that way.
It got me real emo in the age of the Rona.
I absolutely cried. Although, to be fair, I cry at the end of most movies.
I'm not a big crier, and there was one tear. I was like, the survivors. And it's just such a hopeful end to a movie that I feel like does have a lot of very, like, I mean, our ultimate bad idea was
right.
The weather is going to kill us. And if we don't get it together. But, like, there's also that cause for hope. And I just, I want to end on a cause for hope. We all need a cause for hope.
We do. And I think that it's just like this movie was realistic in every disaster it presented, it is also realistic in every bit of survival and every bit of hope that it presents. Nothing about that is impossible. And I think we're seeing it, you know, in times like right now with the coronavirus, and we're seeing it in other ways, you know, other disasters that befall us on a small scale or a large scale. But we see that hope is realistic.
I feel like I should have some sort of, like, you got this, you can do hard things message. I don't know how to tie it together. So I think I'm just going to say, like, y'all got this, you can do hard things. This is the end of our podcast. If you felt uplifted here at the end, you should share it with your friends, because I want this message. I want this ding-dang message of hope to get out there. So shoot a link to a buddy.
Absolutely. And we are on all podcasting apps anywhere, really. Anywhere you get podcasts, you can find us.
Definitely the two major ones.
Yes.
Google Play and
the App Store.
Apple Podcasts. There's so many now. There are many podcatchers. I don't know how many of them we show up in.
I'm assuming most.
I don't really know how it works. I should look into that. Anyway, you can find us.
But you can also find us on the web at allideasarebadideas.wordpress.com. And on Twitter, we are at badideascast.
I just want to end on one swift note, is that we're getting a new project underway. I am going to, here in the next few weeks, probably, I'm going to start transcribing some of our old episodes. So if you have been not able to listen and you somehow hear this, I guess, you will be able
to
find
those. Or if you know somebody who doesn't listen to podcasts because they don't like the audio, but they like reading transcripts of podcasts, this is the perfect time to bring it up to them that, hey, like, our podcast is having transcriptions. Or if you just like following along, I do better with text. I like having the transcriptions to follow along with on some things. So we're going to get that underway.
So you should start seeing those soon. On, of course, as Jesse already said, allideasarebadideas.wordpress.com. I think that is about going to do it for us here at All Ideas Are Bad Ideas.
We will see you next week. Oh, in 2 weeks. We will see you in 2 weeks.